This episode of the Sarah Carter Podcast is sponsored by the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. Born from the tragedy of 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been honoring America's heroes ever since. Donate $11 a month at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2, t.org.
Hey, everyone, I got a really special guest on our show today, and it's Jerry Torres. He is a U.S. Army Green Beret, decorated and service-disabled veteran. He is a former CIA liaison officer. I love to bring you that insight from people that you may not normally hear from, and especially with everything that's happened in Afghanistan, I think it's very, very important that we talk about that. He is also a retired CEO of one of the massive worldwide, world-known AES, a defense contractor. His company was integral and is still integral in many ways to protecting our embassy staff abroad, overseas. And believe me, this is a man who has been through so much, has seen it all, and is here to talk about what he is going to be doing in the future and what he is doing right now to get the truth out to the American people and the world. He's been traveling to Central America. He is focused on Africa and other parts of the world, and he's producing some very brilliant, brilliant documentary series. So that's who's going to be coming up on the show. You are definitely not going to want to miss it. Of course, Labor Day. Happy Labor Day to everyone. We'll talk a little bit about that in a few minutes to all you communists out there who are enjoying Labor Day. Enjoy a little bit more, and I'll fill you in on the History Channel's description of it. But please follow and subscribe. Get all your links at sarahacarter.com. That's sarahacarter.com. And while you are there, please sign up for our email list so you can get all of the stories right there in your email box, and you're not going to be shadow banned. One of the biggest issues I've been facing, and I know a lot of conservative writers and conservative outlets, is the fact that we're either being marginalized or shadow banned on Facebook and Twitter and other social media outlets, so that you guys can't get the story, can't get the perspective or the opinion that you come here to the Sarah Carter Show to get. So please do, please subscribe and get all your links at sarahcarter.com. Guys, now is the crucial time to be vigilant in the defense of our freedom. There's no way better than to do this than by joining the Association of Mature American Citizens. AMAC believes in fighting the good fight against reckless government spending and the ever-expanding scope of the federal government. You could see what's happening right now in the United States. By joining AMAC, you literally are taking the first steps to saving the America you love. AMAC offers an alternative to just about every benefit that AARP offers, but without the liberal agenda, folks. I stand with AMAC, and I hope that you will too. I encourage you to join today at amac.us/Carter. That's amac.us/Carter. The benefits of membership are great, but the cause is even greater. Join today at amac.us/Carter. You know, I've had a very difficult last few weeks, my husband and I, because Afghanistan has really opened up a lot of wounds. And I almost feel like it's been very helpful to hear from other people, other soldiers that have served alongside my husband, people from, of course, not just the soldiers from the Army, not just Army or officials, but the Navy, the Air Force, all of our troops who sacrificed so much over the last 20 years. And who have given so much of their lives. And by the way, it's not just about the wounds that you can see. It's about the wounds that you can't see, right? It's about those wounds. It's about the high rate of divorces when people were sent overseas over and over again and couldn't be with their families. It's about the emotional trauma that our young men and women had to live with because they saw things that no human being should have to see. You know, I think back at some of the things that I saw when I was in Afghanistan and, the moment that, a young man lost his life on the battlefield that was only 18 years old. And, he was in the helicopter with me and, with the rescue, the PJs that were there to rescue these men that had been hit. And I was thinking to myself, his family doesn't even know. His family doesn't even know that he's gone. And the last thing that he saw was Afghanistan. Some of you weren't even born. Some of you were born, but were too little to remember 2001. You know, you don't remember the people that were on the plane or what it was like to wake up that morning and realize that your whole world had been turned upside down. For some people, literally, their entire world, their entire life was turned upside down. From the people that were in the World Trade Center in the Pentagon, Shanksville, Pennsylvania, where the plane crashed, to the people that were on the plane and the children that were sitting on those planes or in the city with their family that happened to be in the crossfire of these planes that were being used as weapons against us. Or think about like the Madrid train bombings or Bataclan. You know, it's easy for us because I think we move so fast, we forget. Like, we're all about news, right? Like, oh, we're going to forget about this. Afghanistan, that's old news. What's in the news today? What's going to get us the ratings? Well, I'm going to tell you this. Afghanistan is not going away. September 11th did not go away. It's existed. Our war, the so-called longest war, you know, has been around. I mean, this is 20 years. And the way that we left Afghanistan means that it will not end here. It will be far worse. Mark my words. What we have coming, the storm that is coming to us, is going to be far worse, I believe, than anything we've seen in the past. I grew up in the Middle East. I spent a lot of my life wrapped up in, you know, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, the war effort, what was going on overseas. Like Jerry, who's coming up, I mean, I know that he understands this too. You know, like my husband, like Jerry Torres, like all of our friends that have spent all of that time. And it's easy for a lot of us, you know, if we're in America, go to the mall, we take our kids to church, which we should be doing, enjoying our picnics with our families, Labor Day. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But Al-Qaeda does not forget. They don't. Islamic State does not forget. These radical Islamists, that's what I call them, because they're not Muslim. They're not like you meet, you know, I had my friend Saber Rock on last week. I hope you guys all listened to that. This is a different mindset. This isn't about the Muslim people. I want to be very clear here. It's a movement. It's an ideology. It's extreme. It's extreme. And it's very different. And these groups do not forget, and they hate the West, and they hate us. So that's something that we have to be mindful of. We might have left Afghanistan in haste, and we did it the wrong way, in my opinion. We've abandoned Americans, we abandoned our allies, and we gave a bunch of weapons to the bad guys. We might have walked away from Afghanistan, but believe me, Afghanistan did not walk away from us. And in fact, Afghanistan will be a safe haven again. It already is, for Al-Qaeda and for other groups intent on taking down our Western way of life. And they have a completely different mindset in how they'll do it. But they won't do it today on Labor Day, I pray. They won't. We just won't let them. And Labor Day, I don't, you know, I'm like, what is that? What is Labor Day? I remember I was telling Greg about Labor Day in Mexico, and we were in Playa del Carmen. And I wanted to go to a cenote. A cenote is a place where it's kind of like, for those of you that don't know, it's like a beautiful lagoon in caves where you can swim and the water's just like pure and it's gorgeous. And you could picture like a jungle around you and you can swim and hang out and have a little picnic there and imagine what it was like when the ancient Mayans would do that. So we get there thinking it's just a regular day, right? I'm going to go to a local cenote. And lo and behold, here I am with my husband. He's blind. I'm guiding him. We've got the kids, and there's like 1,000 people at the cenote, like celebrating Labor Day, right? The day off, the day of the worker. Everybody's like just piling into the lagoon. I'm like, it looked like a bowl of soup or something, like with people in it. I don't even know what was going on. People were jumping off of the cliffs. I was trying to navigate my husband around. Suffice to say, I celebrated Labor Day with the Mexican people. I had amazing food from some very kind and generous people that were barbecuing and cooking like a type of fajita, like a carne asada. And our family had an amazing, amazing time. Maybe I'll post some of those pictures up on Instagram. But we did have a great time. And thank you, Mexico, for allowing me to celebrate Labor Day with you. So what is Labor Day in America? Well, it's probably some kind of like Marxist communist celebration. But I'm going to look it up. Labor Day on the historychannel.com, history.com. Labor Day, an annual celebration of workers and their achievement, originated during one of American labor history's most dismal chapters, the Industrial Revolution in the 1800s in the United States. The average American worker worked 12-hour days, so nobody complained. Right? 12-hour days and 7-day weeks in order to eke out, just a basic living. Despite restrictions in some states, children as young as 5 or 6 toiled in mills. They're still doing it at my house. They're toiling in the mills at my house, I'm telling you. Factories and mines across the country. That was actually really horrible. And there was all kinds of issues with children literally dying in factories. I mean, factories went up in smoke in New York. Kids lost their lives. I mean, it was just a horrible time. It was just everybody was taking advantage of the situation. We don't want that anymore. Of course, yes, here it comes, the labor unions. We all know that the labor unions aren't the same labor unions of the past. Now they're more extreme. They're more exaggerated. They're very powerful. And they make life impossible for all of us. And Greg, one of these days, we are going to do a whole entire segment on labor unions and why they're making life heck for everyone. Okay. So that's a little bit about Labor Day. Guys, before we get to Jerry Torres, I'm going to rest on Labor Day on my Giza sheets from MyPillow.com. Yes, I'm going to sleep with my pillow. I'm going to rest on my Giza dream sheets. I'm going to wrap myself in the most luxurious towels. Why? Because Mike Lindell, my friend, knows how to make quality products. He cares about our country. And guess what? All Giza Dream Sheets come with a 10-year warranty. You're not going to find that from anybody else. You're not going to go to some local yokel, you know, chain store, right? That probably just shipped a bunch of stuff in from China. And you know what? They're not going to give you that guarantee. I guarantee you that. But you could get a 60-day money-back guarantee from Mike Lindell and a 10-year warranty on your sheets. So before slipping into bed, slip out of your new My Slippers. That's another great product designed for in and outdoor all day wear. Like, yeah, not the soft bottoms, but the bottoms that you could actually wear outside when you go to pick up the newspaper, if you still get that and you're not just looking at your laptop. The My Slippers are made with My Pillow foam and impact gel to prevent fatigue. I have fatigue all the time. I don't know what Mike's going to do about that. For a limited time, you can save 50% on Giza Dream Sheets and My Slippers. Go to MyPillow.com, click on Radio Listener Square, and use the promo code Carter at checkout. Or call 1-800-685-7221 to get the Giza Dream Sheets for as low as $49.99. You'll also find deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including the MyPillow mattress topper, MyPillow towel sets, and so much more. Don't miss the sale of the year. That's MyPillow.com, promo code Carter, or call 1-800-685-7221. Sleep better with MyPillow.com. Jerry, first, thank you so much for joining me today here at the Sarah Carter Show. I have been wanting to meet you ever since Thomas contacted me. Thomas LeCastro, folks, is here in studio. He says he doesn't want to talk because he doesn't want to take up our time. But Thomas is a great friend and a great director, a great filmmaker. He and his brother just did some amazing work, and I'm going to bring you on the show to talk about that later. But Jerry, fill me in. First of all, I want everyone to know, from your own perspective, I want them to hear from you. Tell me a little bit about your life as a Green Beret, going to work for the CIA, what that was like, and what led you to decide, you know what, hey, I want to get out there and I want to be a warrior on the battle of truth and getting the truth out there to the American people.
Yeah, so I joined the military as a teenager. My father was in the Army in Korea at 15 years old, was injured, and got a Purple Heart. They found out when he was 16, after he'd been in a few battles. He was actually in the battle for Osan with Task Force Smith, the 406 people that fought against 5,900 North Koreans.
That was a really harsh, incredible battle. My father also was in Korean War as well.
Yeah. So they sent him back to the States, and he joined the Air Force at 17, which was okay back then. And he had a career as a in the Air Force, retired from the Air Force, then went to the U.S. Marshal Service and became a supervisory deputy U.S. Marshal. His focus was task forces related to organized crime, drug cartels, and organized gangs in Miami, from Miami basically to Boston.
So it's in your blood. I mean, your dad to you, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's pretty incredible.
So I joined at 17, but I had to wait until I was 18. And then I launched, and I stayed on active duty for 8 years. Then I went into the National Guard system, then the reserve system. And then I actually did more deployments as a reservist, because any unit could pull you for a mission any place in the world. And I did that for many years. So I was able to have a private sector job.
Right.
And I had good – I worked with some very good people who would let me go for 3 months or 6 months at a time. So I did that for many years.
Tell me a little bit about your deployments, because, I agree with you. When I was in Afghanistan as a journalist, I don't think people realize, and maybe all of you out there who are listening to us right now, it's really incredible how many National Guardsmen just kept coming back after back again and again. I mean, and this is a huge deal, because you got to leave the private sector.
Right.
You leave your job behind, leave your family behind. Yep. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that.
So I was in the reserves, and I was pulled into Special Operations Command South. And I did peacekeeping operations. I did a lot of things. Counter-drug, counter-terrorism, FID, foreign internal defense missions, and peacekeeping training throughout South America. Hit almost every country. I was assigned to the U.S. Embassy as the operations officer in Argentina. And the deputy chief of mission, which is the deputy ambassador, hired me as well to be the INL officer for that region. So I did that. So when I was there, that's when Afghanistan happened. And so a few months later, I was
deployed. So this was around
2001,
2002.
Correct. Correct.
Right.
So then I deployed to Afghanistan from there. And they put me in the JOC, Joint Operations Center, because I was a reservist. So I ran the JOC as a E-7.
What part of Afghanistan were you in? Was it Bagram first?
Bagram first, yes. So I was the JOC NCO for about 3 months. And then the J3 said, hey, we got two teams. They need a team sergeant, both of them. So I had two teams at the same time, two Special Forces teams.
That's a lot of responsibility, especially during that time.
Yeah, so I was the team leader, the team sergeant, and the teams, both teams, O&I, Operation Intelligence Sergeants, at the same time. So, and those teams were competitive. They wanted to outdo each other. So,
Hey, that's a good place to outdo yourselves, right?
Yeah,
I mean, this is where we were going after the bad guys. And I don't think people realize as well. I mean, when you're listening to Jerry talk, this was a time where, it's still hard to put all the pieces together, to get all the information, like what was really going on the ground. We were chasing Al-Qaeda. We were trying to hold the Taliban accountable,
right?
I mean, this was Mike Spann was the first CIA officer. He died.
Mm-hmm.
He was killed in the Pink Fortress in Mazar Sharif.
Mm-hmm.
So you were there during that whole episode, right?
Sure, yeah.
What was that like?
I was out in Gardez, Ghazni, and I went to Jabad as well. So I had those—
The eastern provinces.
Paktia and Paktika provinces.
Yeah.
So I wasn't aware of what was going on operationally in those other areas. So—
What was it like in Paktia and Paktia province? Because I remember that was pretty much run over completely by Taliban.
Yeah, rockets. Rockets
constant
every day. There was a fire base close to us in a place called Sahak, and they were getting hit every day. And the SEALs went through that area, and they were hit. And I think they lost one, and a few were injured in an ambush. And so about 6 months later, after I took over those two teams, we wanted to go after those guys. So we actually put a plan together. I was able to recruit some sources, that came to our side. We actually put one in the Gardez Police Department, and he would go back and check out, you know, what was going on. And when people would show up, he'd say, okay, tonight there's a big shindig. Let's go out and, you know, let's go out and hit him, and we'd do the hits.
That's incredible.
So we actually got the guys that shot those SEALs in that in one raid one
night. That's an amazing story. I know my husband's listening to this right now because he listens to every podcast. This is probably going to be one of his favorite podcasts just because I think he can and by the way, Nasty and all the guys who are listening to this in Montana, thank you so much. I know you'll be listening to this podcast as well with Jerry, and I know this is something that you all can understand. When you think about what's happened in Afghanistan right now, I just want to get your perspective before we move on to, you know, all the great things that you're doing now, Jerry. It's been so gut-wrenching for me, and it's been gut-wrenching for my husband to see, and for our friends, frankly, and everyone we know, to see what's happened in Afghanistan, to see how we, the way we walked away from it, how we abandoned so many Americans and so many of our allies. What is going through your mind? I mean, just on a personal level, you could disagree with me. I mean, but what how do you feel about it?
Well, I feel horrible. You know, I had five linguists that went out, you know, on the missions with us, and this is out in Gardez and Ghazni and places that are way far away from Kabul. So there are American citizens or SIV holders that are way out in the areas that nobody's really concentrating on, and they can't get into Kabul. So I have not heard from those five guys at all in years. But I can imagine, because there were a lot with Special Forces, the, you know, the SEALs and the Rangers and the folks out, you know, the infantry guys. And they're stuck out there. You know, remember, they only had one place to launch from or to leave the country from, and that's Kabul. You can only get to Kabul through main roads, you know, and they've got them all covered. You know, I used to see these guys at checkpoints, you know, when we're in our Humvees, and they would just clear out because they didn't want to take, you know, a 50 cal or something like
that. Right, right.
So, but these guys don't have that, you know, and they know who they are. You know, one of the things that bothers me is when we left – except probably for the embassy, when we left all the documentation behind of all the people we've ever screened that ever worked for the United States government at our bases. And that's what they're going through it. They're super intelligent. These are millennial people, by the way. Do you see how young they are on TV?
Oh, yeah. They're great on television. They have – I knew that the Taliban had become very well adept in the internet and in the ways of computer science and all of that. I saw that when I was in Pakistan in 2010. Yeah. Actually, in 2010, we saw the same things. And I'm just – and now we know there's over 2,300, I've been told by U.S. Intel personnel, over 2,300 al-Qaeda on the ground in Afghanistan right now. I got a message from someone. I haven't been able to verify it yet, but the second in command for al-Qaeda supposedly has been seen on the ground right now inside Afghanistan. And the threat to all of these linguists' lives. I talked to Brandon Ray Seabolt, who's the Medal of Valor winner, a very good friend of my husband's. Hi, Brandon. I'm throwing that out there for him. But Brandon was telling me, you know, hey, look, he's been getting calls from people that linguists have already been executed on the ground.
Yes. Oh,
their wives have been beaten in order to extract information from them. And I mean, as a war fighter and as somebody who worked with our U.S. intelligence, and I mean, this has got to be the biggest kick in the gut, you know, that anybody can imagine, because you feel so helpless. What can you do?
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing is after I got off of active duty, I started a company.
Yeah.
And we hired almost 1,000 linguists in to deploy to or hire them locally in Afghanistan. And the records of those people are at those bases in Afghanistan now. So these guys know who they are and where to go to find them. You know,
why did we do this? Did they even give you a chance to clear out your records?
Well, I sold the company.
You sold the company, but have you heard anybody getting the chance? Because DynaCorp said they did not get the chance to clear out their records.
No, absolutely not. The people that own my company now didn't have a chance to, you know, get their people out. you know, much less a record. So
what do you think happened here? Jerry, you're a smart guy. You have seen these deals go down before. I mean, Khalil Azad was the guy that was apparently negotiating all these deals, you know, with the Taliban. Do you think there's a deal we just don't know about? Do you think something happened where the White House was just like, without telling the CIA, without telling anybody else, just said, okay, let's just get the heck out of Dodge in the next 2 weeks and just caught everybody off guard?
I think it's what everybody's been saying, you know, op-ed for 9/11. You know, 20 years later, 9/11, op-ed, I look good, I'm Mr. Biden, I'm going to get reelected, and Harris, you know,
and to hell
elected.
With all the people that died.
Exactly. You know, a month before, and I think you probably already know this, but a month before, they cut the Air Force loose.
Right.
You know, there were nobody to maintain the aircraft, et cetera, you know, which is another point.
Isn't it interesting how that was all done?
Here's the thing about that equipment. You know, the equipment are going to Chinese. Now, remember, all of that equipment has millions of line of program code, right? Source code,
right.
Executable source code. And so what these guys are doing, they're reverse engineering that. Now, those helmets, the night vision goggles for the, you know, for the ground forces, night vision goggles for the Blackhawks, and that is those are very expensive.
Yeah, that ISR capability is supposed to be just, I mean, but, it's the top of the world, right? It's top of the line. We can't even travel with some of it.
Right. But that has source code. The equipment is one thing, but the code behind it, the computer programming code behind that stuff, is what the Chinese and the Russians need to catch up with us. And nobody's really looked at that from that perspective. I was a computer programmer, and I understand.
That's what I was just going to ask you, because you are a computer programmer.
Yeah.
What? I know. You guys are sitting out there thinking, Sarah, you didn't tell us everything about Jerry Torres. Yeah. This man is a genius. I'm telling you, just the fact that he is on this show right now is an honor for me, is an honor. He doesn't do much of this. So you guys are hearing it straight from the horse's mouth right here. I mean, this is, Jerry, these are our adversaries. When you think about China, when you think about Russia, you think about the space race, you're not just talking about in the war zone and source coding, but we are like literally being surrounded. Our nation, folks, that's why we've talked about it, and we're going to talk to Jerry about this in a minute, about his work in Central America, but we see the Chinese government, the CCP, extending itself, just its tentacles across the globe in a way that we have never seen before. Are we under, literally, I think our national security is at stake. I don't know if you agree with me on this or not. I don't think the Chinese need us as much as we think they do. We need, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think they think, like, this is a good time to strike while the iron's hot.
Right. You know, the first indication is, you know, they built a base right in Djibouti, right next to our base. You know, Djibouti is where your husband served, where they launched the missions to Somalia, Mogadishu. And that's pretty brazen. I mean, but they buy the local politicians.
Right.
I mean, that's how they do it. So I'm kind of involved in a project with Thomas and in Sierra Leone. And the project is to help feed their population because they want to get out from the Chinese thumb. They have to buy 2/3 or 3/4, I think I told you, of the rice from China because they made a deal with China. You know, the Chinese are pretty brutal. They want to extend their tentacles out there everywhere. I was speaking to, I have a former intel officer that's lined up the meetings that I spoke about in
Central America?
Central America, El Salvador.
Right.
And the president is under the El Salvador president. He's pretty new. He's under the thumb of the Chinese right now. And one of the things that they want to do is get the Chinese out of town. They didn't realize what kind of business they were getting involved with. So
right.
So I
which was the same which was the same issue, Jerry, that when I spoke to President Yamate in Guatemala and had that interview with him during Vice President Kamala Harris, I don't know what she was doing there's visit. It was the reason he was saying, look, the Chinese have offered and are building a massive superhighway in Guatemala. And I've said this before on the podcast. I said to him, well, President Yamate, the Chinese don't do anything for free. And he said, no, they don't. And he said, but what about our bilateral relationship with the United States? Why is the United States wanting to hand us money but not build a strong economic trade?
Right.
And he got a point. Is that what you're going to be talking about with El Salvador's president? I mean, is this an issue that you think, I mean, we need to start paying attention to?
Oh, absolutely. We do need trade with those countries, you know, so that they can build their economic base. And that's an issue. So that wasn't going to be the focus, but I can actually bring that up. I think I have an hour and a half with them or something like that.
I think that'd be a great thing to do. See, I gave them an idea.
Yeah.
Everyone's out there.
Yeah.
You are really, Jerry, like truly one of the most interesting people I've ever met and interviewed. And right now, your focus is to kind of get the truth out to the public. You said when you first started, when you retired, and I thought this was really interesting, you were going to do wildlife videos and maybe National Geographic or produce these pieces, which I think is extraordinary. And I love wildlife just as much as you do. But you shifted and you changed and you're now doing something new and different. By the way, I would love to be a part of what he's doing. So I'm going to bug you now that I know you forever until I get to do something with you.
That's fine. But
let's talk about that.
So why am I doing this? You know, I go across Memorial Bridge every day. And I saw, you know, what looked like illegal immigrants. You know, I'm brown, so I think I can talk about my own people that way. Mm-hmm. So I started talking to them, and most of them were from, you know, Central America, the three, you know, El Salvador, right. Guatemala, Honduras. And so I started to talk to them, and, you know, I'd say, well, you know, did you get your, you know, do you have an asylum appointment? No, I'd missed it. I didn't go to it, et cetera. And I noticed that there weren't any other people other than the Central Americans working on that project. I bike over there every day. And,
right.
And I thought, that's kind of strange. So I looked up the contract, and I went back into the history, and it was Congress that set that up. I mean, Pelosi, it went through Harris, you know, and the vice president. And the whole idea was to give jobs to the African-American community that was 5 miles from the job site. That was the entire purpose of that program.
So, incredible.
So I staked it out, and I took some films, you know, just so I had some backup. My intent was actually to, you know, broadcast it, to educate the people of the country and what's happening. I also went to Arlington County Public Works kind of thing, you know, and they had the same sort of situation where they had nothing but illegals, and they had programs that were supposed to be for our own U.S. citizens.
So it's just kind of like you stumbled on it on your own, kind of just,
right.
I know that's usually how the greatest stories come about, right?
So, yeah, so that happened. So I've actually filmed a lot of it, and I've kind of, you know, spoken to Thomas about kind of getting that message out there. So now I had a company that I sold recently. We had 8,600 employees around the world.
Huge
when I
company.
Sold it. We protected about 30 U.S. embassies and consulates, 40 bases, all of which were overseas, and including in El Salvador. And I also did for the government, State Department, risk analysis for the embassies in Guatemala and Honduras. So I know the area. Plus, I'd also worked there as a civilian.
Right.
So I knew the areas. I hired a lot of people from those countries. And it just didn't make sense to me that all these people are coming to our country when there is plenty of jobs in those countries. And the social benefits are pretty good. So, for example, in all three countries, Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador, if you don't have a job, you get about $400 a month. Now, that doesn't sound like much. But you know something? Think about this. We've been giving $300 and $300, mm-hmm. and people are living okay right now.
Right.
And and the cost of living down there is super, super, super cheap. You know,
right. You get great food for like, you know, because it is. It's a cheaper cost of living. And granted, there is some poverty and stuff. But you can buy a meal with very little.
Right. You know, compare that to Argentina. Argentina is $800 a month. That's their average salary. You know, Colombia is about $650 a month. So that's not a bad, you know, income for somebody, you know, for those countries. So
what is it then?
I was in Guatemala. We were kicking off a program to protect. We have a joint base down there. It's U.S. Army, Air Force, Navy, forward operating base. And we got the contract to protect that. So while I was there, I started watching TV and seeing the people going to the border.
Right.
So I started to talk to one of my intelligence officers. I said, do me a favor, find out why those guys are going to this state. So he brought the deputy commissioner for San Salvador, who spoke to me for days. and talked about, and I'm saying, why, you know, if they're claiming asylum, what is it that you guys are doing that justifies them claiming asylum? Are you guys systematically torturing, detaining, killing? Oh, no, no. We have a couple pueblos that have problems with some police, but we try to clean them up, the whole thing. And so I decided to drive around and see for myself. And then at that time, this is when Trump was building the wall. So it was they call them cartels. They actually call them mafias. But it's the cartels were paying these guys to go from El Salvador to Honduras, $400 each. And then from Honduras, when they got to the Mexican border, another $400. And then they would make their way all the way to the border. Now, here's what's happened. And so this is what I'm going down to El Salvador.
And they all had brand new flags. I was right at the border of Guatemala and Honduras. They all looked like they were clean and carrying beautiful banners. I was like, you guys weren't like, you know, out in the woods for like a month, you know, maybe now. But back then they weren't. They were like on buses.
Right.
Drinking Mai Tais or something.
Right.
I don't know what was going on.
So, you know, there is not a case for asylum. So part of the reason I want to go to El Salvador is to say, to educate the United States that this is what asylum is. The people who really need asylum are the people from Afghanistan right now.
Right.
And the Uyghurs in China. I mean, those are examples. Or the refugees in Syria.
Exactly.
You know, I've been to the UN camps on the border between Syria and Jordan. And it's just those people deserve a place to live.
100%. And there's people that have actually – and look, I speak – you know, my mother's from Cuba. My family was from Cuba. I speak Spanish. I get it. I have a great love for so many of the people. I spent all my time at the border. And I feel like these people are being used as political pawns in a very dangerous game that doesn't even care about them. And it's these, you know, these same people that we're talking about, the rats that we were talking about before we got on, that are playing these games, and they have no consideration for the children that are dying, the children that are being abused. Right now, there's a report, and you probably haven't even seen it. Maybe you have. It just came out. Someone contacted me about it, that 40% of the kids that came into this country from Central America that were supposed to be tracked by HHS and DHS, they don't even know where they went.
Sure.
They just... okay, see you later. Yeah. So now we can't even follow up to make sure that they're with the families they should be.
Right.
So Jerry, there is something happening here. There's a shift, a change in our nation, a change in what's going on. You're seeing it. I'm seeing it. We know the real deal.
Right.
We've seen Afghans that have put their lives on the line for us. Yeah. That they've cried. Thomas, who isn't talking, but can vouch for us here, that they've literally shed tears over this because they feel abandoned.
Right.
We have people in Syria who do need a place to live that are good people, by the way, guys, great people.
Yeah.
And of course, the Uyghurs.
Right. Yeah.
What is going on here? What do we do? And how do we expose this? I mean, I know we don't have a lot of time left, but I really want to give you this moment to tell me what I can do to help you, one, because I think your mission is probably going to be one of your most important missions of your life. I know you're a Green Beret. I tell my husband this all the time. Babe, your mission is going to be, even after all of this, is probably going to be one of the most important missions, and it's to get the truth out, and it's to, you know, shed light on all the great work that you, the men and women, have done. What can we do?
Well, the first thing is we have to take Congress back to stop what the Democrats are doing, because they're setting us up. They're trying to topple the country, in my opinion. You know, and it's not of them. It's just a very few. But they get more media time than the conservatives. And the conservatives are, you know, non-media type of people. So we have to take that first. And then we have to, you know, put a positive message out there, you know, on how we do, how we are as a nation, and how we're perceived as a nation around the world. You know, when I go to Africa, or I go to Latin America, or I go to Eastern Europe and those places, you know, I'm automatically looked upon as, hey, we got an American here. You know, let's meet him and let's do these kinds of things and let's take him someplace. And people love us. You know, that's why we have 190 countries in this world, and people are always coming here. We give 9 million visas, 900,000 visas per year for people to come to our country. And we've given, you know, over 20,000 visas since 2010 or something like that for people to come into our country. 250,000 family, mm-hmm. green cards to stay here, and about 250,000 new citizens. So,
right.
And those people are coming from every country in the world.
Yeah, you don't see that in any other country. You don't see people fleeing here to go to Guatemala, even
right.
though it's beautiful. I love Guatemala. I'm not trying to put it down. But you don't see people fleeing other places in the world. They're trying to get here. They'll go through five countries to get here.
Right. And the other thing is education.
Right.
We have to give them the education that got us to where we are in the first place. And we are an exceptional nation. You know,
right.
I'm proof of it. You know, I joined the Army. I got my degree while I was in the Army.
Yeah.
And I was educated without a computer. Everyone, has computers back then. We didn't have them.
You had microfiche. I remember those days.
Yeah, I remember
those.
Went
into the library.
Yeah, the whole thing. And the thing is we have to get back the education. So, for example, city council people across this country are important because they help, create the educational system.
Right, the local people got to get their local back.
Their local people, that's correct. So, for example, in Florida, when I was in a meeting the other day, they have five members of the education board. All of a sudden, three of them are trying to do the CRT thing because they're leftists. And you have two. So now I've got my friends thinking, maybe I should run for the education board. And that's what we need. It's got to be local so we can turn our clock back to getting a real education.
Jerry, you're so right. And this is for every one of you out there. This is what I keep saying on the show here. And I know it's like we're family, right? Because all of us are listening. You listen to the show. I read all your comments. I feel that way, too. I feel like we are the warriors on the front line. And I don't mean in a bloody battle like we've seen in Afghanistan. I mean in a fight for our nation's soul, right? A fight for the Constitution, a fight for this country. A fight for liberty and freedom. I always say that when I'm listening to you talk about all the people that are coming here, all the visas, I think to myself, that is the one thing that's worth fighting for is our freedom. It's just freedom. Don't give it away.
Right.
It could be just like 5 minutes a day, right?
Right?
Jerry, like 5 minutes a day, you take the time to look at what's happening in your kid's school and say, you know what? Mm-mm, this... Whatever homework assignment you just gave my kid is not going to do math that has to do with CRT.
Right.
And you call the school out on it. Or you go to the, church and you do something with your community or your mosque or wherever, or your synagogue, I don't care.
Yeah.
Wherever you want to go, do something to fight for freedom.
Right.
Because nobody else in the world will do it for you.
Right.
I mean, it's up to each one of us. We saw that in Afghanistan. We're seeing
right.
it.
Right.
We saw it in Mogadishu. We've seen it in all the most horrible places.
Right.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you so much.
Guys, the Federal Reserve admits inflation is increasing. So how do you protect your investments? With gold. With so many gold companies, how do you know who to trust or that you're even getting authentic rare coins and precious metals? That's easy. It's Universal Coin and Bullion. Visit universalcoin.com/Sarah or call 1-800-UCB-GOLD. That's 1-800-UCB-GOLD to get no costs, no obligation gold info kit to easily protect and enjoy your rare coins and precious metals. Tell them Sarah sent you. That's universalcoin.com/Sarah or call 1-800-UCB-GOLD. You know, I always say that the one reason I bring certain guests on the show is because they have so much more vast knowledge of a particular subject than I do. And Jerry Torres is one of those people. I mean, even though I spent time in Afghanistan, even though my husband fought over there, he has a different perspective. And he has really been able to see the world from so many different angles, right? Not just from the front lines, being in the war, a Green Beret, but traveling the world with his company. And he's also a computer programmer, an expert in computers. I mean, the guy is a genius. And now, obviously, he is producing documentaries and getting the truth out. He's his own investigative journalist. But think about this. Think about, what he was saying, I mean, and what he was talking about when it comes to the Taliban, right? And about our government, working at a deal with a terrorist organization. Because really, that's what they are. And Greg brought up something that was important. It was either you're cutting a deal with these guys, you're either totally naive, which I just don't believe, right? Or you've got some kind of deal, some side deal that Khalil Azad, who negotiated this exodus with the Taliban knows about that we don't know about, or President Biden knows about and his staff, like Susan Rice and them. What was it? What was it that they talked about that would allow American lives to be abandoned, our allies to be abandoned? And basically, I want you to think about this. We have so many different agencies involved in operations in Afghanistan. It just occurred to me right now. You have the CIA, you have, you know, the NSC, you have the DEA, the FBI. They were all there. All these different agencies. You have DynaCorp, you have companies that are working there. It appears that nobody was the wiser, right? They knew something was going to happen, but they all believed, according to the sources that I've spoken with, that they had 90 days, that they were going to wrap up, they were going to take their stuff, they were going to get out. That's what they thought. They thought that they were going to be able to get out and at least get the majority of the people that were their allies out, or wrap up kind of like you heard Jerry say it. The company that he once ran in Afghanistan, which is now owned by other people, they didn't even have enough time to get their people out or their equipment or anything. So when you think about it in that perspective, it's like, who made the decision then? Who said, we're going to get out this fast, and it doesn't matter what any of these other agencies think. It doesn't matter what they do. We're going to make this decision, and we're going to go for it right now. Some people say, we talked last week to Simone Ledeen, that it was, you know, President Biden's decision. I want to know. I don't know. You know, I know that that's what President Biden always wanted, but he's just so out of it now. I just can't imagine him making this decision on the fly. I feel like someone put it in his head. And I think it's endangered all of our lives. I truly believe as commander in chief, he should resign. And I truly believe that Lloyd Austin should resign and General Milley should resign. I believe all of these people should resign because their only job is to protect our country. That's it. That's the executive branch. That's the military. They're supposed to protect our national security. They are not supposed to sell us out. They are not supposed to sell us out and make us look weak before the world and really harm our reputation with our allies. Oh, detrimentally, by the way. Just think about it. Right? We need to call for hearings. We need to find out the truth. And we need to find out what was going on. Because even the Washington Post said that Mullah Baradar was willing and offered our troops, basically our DOD, our government, the city of Kabul, and said, you guys can take control of the city of Kabul while you conduct your exodus. Because even Mullah Baradar didn't trust his own guys. He knows he has no control over what's going to happen on the ground. This is a ragtag fleet of guys shooting guns up into the air and just assassinating and killing anybody and everybody they think is an enemy. There's no trial. You're not going to go to court and face a judge and jury and whether or not you were an American sympathizer. Someone's going to say you're an American sympathizer and then they're going to kill you. Or you're an American and we're going to keep you hostage or we're going to kill you. So I just want you to all think about that. Think about what the Biden administration has done. And for those of you who wanted the war over, I get it. It's over now, but it shouldn't have ended this way. Because it's in the end, it's really not going to be over. This war is going to last generations to come. Mark my words. Thank you so much for following me. Thank you so much for being a part of the Sarah Carter Show. You know, it's here where we're taking the story back. Remember to go to sarahacarter.com. That's sarahacarter.com where you can get links to all your social media. And please download this podcast wherever you get your podcasts on Apple, Spotify. I mean, there's just a million of them out there. Wherever you get your podcast, please download it. iHeart too. Again, thank you so much for being a part of my life. I thank you every single day for everything you do. We're one family. We're one America. Let's fight together. Let's live together. And God bless.
Frank's
Ziller, I am so happy to actually meet you. Tunnel to Towers is an organization, a foundation that I am so proud being a sponsor for the Sarah Carter Show. So thank you so much. Talk to me about the impact of the foundation and what you've been able to do to date since starting the organization.
Well, never in a million years that we think we'd be doing all the work that we're doing. You know, we just want to make sure that we honored the sacrifice and never forgot what happened on 9/11, not just to Stephen, but all those that perished that day. But you know what? It's just 10 years ago, we delivered our first smart home. From there, we realized there's such a great need. You know, these great men and women are coming back with these injuries that they would never have survived before on the battlefield. And they need specially adapted smart homes, and they deserve to have a mortgage free. And that's what we've been doing ever since. So, you know, to date, we've done over 250 of those mortgage free homes, whether it's for smart home recipients, Gold Star families, or fallen first responder families that leave young kids behind. And this year alone, we're going to deliver 200 of those mortgage free homes. So we're very proud of that work. And they're not inexpensive. Each one of them not inexpensive. So we count on the goodness of America to join us.
T2T.org. That's T2T.org. It's only $11 a month. It's up to every single one of us to do our part to help those that were willing to give everything to protect us and our families.